Okay, welcome everybody. Pat Williams, today is August 29th. It's on a monthly forum, and this is part two of our forum on mastery. Last time, those of you who were here, or maybe you had a chance to listen to the recording, and of course, if not, you can still find it on lifecoachtraining.com. We talked about the ingredients of mastery, what goes into the process of mastery, gave you some handouts for that and some links that were hopefully helpful. And then today we have one of our ILCT students who volunteered to be coached by me. And we're probably going to do this longer than most of our little quick demos because I think for us to have a chance to really elongate the conversation and show you some of the skills I want to show you, and hopefully it will be almost masterful. Because one thing I can tell you is Mona and I haven't rehearsed. We met briefly on the phone, and she's going to have something she wants coaching on, and I think we'll probably do that for at least 25 minutes or so, the same that you would if you were going for your oral examination. Most coaching sessions that I have with clients are no more than 30 to 40 minutes anyway. So what I'd like you all to do, you're all muted, is make some notes of what you heard that you felt was particularly helpful or good coaching or was insightful for you in some way or inspirational. Also, write down the things that you went, oh, I don't think that was good, or that was, I'd do it differently. I mean, everybody will do it differently, I'm sure. But I want you to be unrelenting. You know, if usually I'll catch myself if I find myself asking a yes-no question and I go back. But I will try to be in the moment and be as masterful as I can with the use of all the skills I know and years of experience. And then the other thing, of course, is any questions, or we want to debrief this in the last half hour of our call together. So let's start with setting the space, Mona, just like if you were a new client or a potential client with me, this is the way we do it. And I'd say we're going to experience 25 minutes of coaching or so. So I'd like you to let me know what it is, what would you like to get out of our 25 minutes together? What would you bring to the coaching?
I have a significant problem with clutter. The physical clutter, it blocks me mentally, emotionally, and functionally. I have a lot of stuff, and I've moved in April, and there are things that I can't find, and it's very frustrating, and I don't want to go buy new things, but if I can't find it and I need it, then I have to, and then usually within a month after I buy something new, I find the old one, and so that's really frustrating.
Now, when you say buy something new, are you talking about clothes? Are you talking about other things that you have in the household, anything other than that?
Well, like my bath scales. I try to keep track of my weight. I have goals to get healthier. And the scales is part of the commitment that I've made to weigh myself every Monday, part of the measurement. And I haven't been able to do it since April.
So you can't find your scales.
Right.
Okay. So give me an idea again of this, and then we'll talk about use of our time. So is your clutter let's see, how can I phrase this? Is it just in one location in your house? Is it everywhere, just particular room? What would you say?
I have five rooms, so it's in three out of five rooms.
Okay, all right.
The bathroom and the kitchen are the only two that I would say are organized and free of clutter.
Okay, so that proves that you can have an organized and free of clutter space, doesn't it?
Well, those two are easy.
All right, we'll get to that. So I also heard you say you moved a lot. So has this cluttering been a perennial problem, or is it just kind of caught up with you? What would you say?
I'd say it's a chronic problem.
Okay.
I know that it originally started relative to a history of trauma. And I tend to hang on to things, kind of saying, yeah, I did that, and see, this proves it. You know, because without tangible proof, nobody will believe me. That's the fear it's connected to. So, you know, I know where it started, but when it comes right down to it, I really have a hard time letting go of things. I'm a fiber artist, I collect books, I collect fiber, yarns, all the equipment. I have probably a half dozen looms, including a floor loom that takes up almost as much space as a twin bed. You know, I just have a lot of stuff, and it's really hard for me to let go of it.
Okay. Well, let's get into that a little bit more. So with our 25 minutes today, 20 minutes or so, what would you hope would happen at the end of our conversation? That, I mean, we're obviously not going to get the three rooms cleaned up, right? But you want
right.
something, you want something to be different. What would you like to be different?
I'd like to stop accumulating stuff and then really be able to let go. I've even been studying minimalism. That's, you know, I think that's an idealistic hope, but I would certainly I'd like to get to a comfortable version of Mona's minimalism.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I think of minimalism, because I've seen pictures, that's like when you have hardly any furniture and a few pictures, and it looks pretty stark to me, but That's even if you like that image, that's a long way from piles of files and clothes and things that are cluttering your rooms. So let's start with some hope and an ideal that by the end of our coaching, some new thought process that leads to some new action will happen for you today. That when you leave this call, you'll do something different toward success of ridding yourself of some clutter. Do you think that's possible?
I certainly think it's possible, and let me sort of forewarn you and other participants on the call that because I can never predict when a trauma element might pop up, I may become emotional, and I'm okay with that. I'm sure that you're probably okay with that.
Yeah.
Every time some trauma element gets triggered, it's an opportunity for me to heal and grow. And so I'm more than open to it.
All right. Well, I appreciate your view of that because even in coaching, I like to normalize emotions and normalize reactions. If you can handle it in a coaching format, fine. If you ever need or have gone to therapy, you know when it's most useful to see a therapist or somebody in a medical profession, but when I hear emotions with clients, I just feel that it's emotion, energy in motion. And there's some questions I'm going to ask you right now. So when you look around at your clutter and you think of the most energy draining room that you'd like to tackle, which would it be? Which of the three rooms that hold the clutter?
My living room.
Okay. Yeah, good, because that's a space you want to be able to spend a lot of time in. The other rooms, you can shut the doors and work on that clutter later. Because what I want for you is to have some success in creating your space. I mean, the reason we even call it a living room, you want to be able to live and breathe and be there. The other question I'd like to ask you is, in your living room, is there anything, as you mentioned earlier, that is related to the trauma evidence? I heard you say you like to keep some things because you might have to have proof someday. And I get that, but I don't think piles of clothes are proof, are they?
No, and fortunately I don't have piles of clothes anywhere. I've worked on that piles of clothes, everything is currently hanging in the closet.
Okay, good. I had a different image of that. Thank you for clarifying that. So it's books, papers, yarn. What what part is in the living room that relates to that proof that you mentioned you might need someday? And you don't need to go into details for what it is, but, you know, what would you say? How much could you tell me that is in the living room that you need to hang on to?
Well, you know, my first inclination to answer that question would be to say, how much do I need to hang on to? There's a part of me that says all of it. And so that's part of the problem. I really need to get comfortable and recognize, no, I don't need to hang on to this. I need to be free of it.
Well, I specifically want to get clear with you, though, on the part you said you might need as proof someday. I mean, I don't know the whole story, but if there's something you can't get rid of because you need to have it there someday, where could it be put? Into safe storage or lock and key or organized boxes? Where else could that be stored?
Well, let's start with books.
Okay.
All right. So there are certain books that I recognize say that, yes, my family loved me. They recognized my love for books. They nurtured it. And so I often receive gifts of books. So some of those books probably take up one shelf that's about, let's say, 2.5 feet wide. So those books I really like to keep out and on display because they're treasures. I am no longer willing to pay for storage outside of my home. I do have one of the three rooms that I included in my account. One of those three rooms is actually a storage room, and it's full, but I could probably tear it down a little more, but I've organized it. Things are locatable in there, and so I want to work on the living room next because, like you said, I want to be able to live in the living room and feel some peace and comfort in that room.
Okay. So here's the big question. Are you in the living room now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I want you to look around the living room and just take a glance, more than a glance, a long, slow scan of everything that's in that living room. I understand the books, which are treasures, are there, and that sounded like a small area. What else in there could you either let go of totally or find a place, another place to put it out of sight, out of mind? So that's a two-part question. Like, what would go in pile A that you could get rid of totally? And then what there would go in pile B that could be organized and put away out of sight?
I guess the next pile would be the books. I have a lot of professional books since I'm an LCSW, and I tend to try to read the latest and greatest on the things that I specialize in, which is trauma, addictions, and eating disorders. But I have a lot of older books. I even found a box of books from college 20 years ago, so those are already out the door to be thrown away or given away, but I need to pare that down even further because I can see some book titles that don't really relate to what I currently do and what my future goals are. So I think that that would help to eliminate probably another third of what I currently have in terms of book inventory.
So you've got some books you're ready to donate to the library or give away or already. And if I heard you right, you said there's some more you can add to that.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. That's a good start. And just so you know, personally, I can totally relate to that because I've had 13 moves, 13 addresses in the last 25 years, and books were always the heaviest part of those moves. When I started coaching in 1990 and then full-time in 95, there weren't any books on coaching. And now I think I've got a whole bookshelf with four shelves. All the books are on coaching. So things change. And eventually you say, I hear you saying, I don't really need those anymore, and there's some others. So let's start there. Where could you, after this call, where could you go to in your living room and just begin almost ruthlessly say, I don't need this. I can put this in the go to the library pile, the donate pile.
I have two bookshelves, you know, the kind that's like probably 6 feet probably 6 feet high and about 30 inches wide, probably four or five shelves each. I could work on those two bookcases first and eliminate books that are either college books or that aren't in line with my current interest or future goals.
Okay, so imagine yourself doing that now, because I don't want you to do it while we're on the call. Imagine yourself walking over to that shelf, you seeing this book, this book, this book. Can you take them, grab them, and put them in an empty box? Or is there some hanging on to that occurs?
I can look at the shelf and I can pick out particular books that I can see probably at least 6, maybe 10 already that I would be willing to put into a box and let go of.
Okay, good start, good start. So,
If I could mention that, I think it helps that I said that I'd be willing to eliminate things that aren't in line with current or future interests or goals. When
Absolutely.
I said that, I felt the let go happen.
Oh, so that's kind of saying that out loud to me is kind of a different volume than you've heard it before.
Yes.
All right. Great. That almost leads me to something else that I don't mean as any kind of an answer, but in working with lawyers a long time, I've had a lot of clutter, and myself, I'll say, what I want to say is there is a method in a madness to take this idea of three piles when you're thinking of getting rid of stuff. Can you imagine what those three piles might be?
Keep,
if you had,
toss, and
go
give.
Ahead.
Keep, toss, and give.
Yeah, keep, talk. Oh, keep, toss, and give.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's right. So pile A is, I don't want to get rid of it. I need to keep it. Pile B is, this can just be tossed. It's old. It's in bad condition. It's old magazines, old journals, whatever. Just toss them. Put them out in the trash the next day. And then pile C is give away, donate. And one thing about that is if the library keeps them, you always know where they are. Plus, half of what you have is probably online, isn't it? If you ever need to look at the resource again.
Right.
Okay. So would that be a willing strategy for you after the end of this call and starting later today that you'd start making those keep, toss, and give piles?
I won't be able to work on it again until Sunday. I've carved out 4 hours each Sunday morning to work on the clutter. And I'm not so good at committing to it on a daily basis, but for the past 4 Sundays, I've been pretty good about doing it then.
Okay. All right. So I hear some words like pretty good, I've committed 4 hours. Is there anything else you could say to make sure that you're going to tell me that Sunday morning, starting at blank, you're going to start decluttering the living room?
I have a buddy coach that I have made the commitment to, and I put it on my calendar on my iPhone, and it reminds me like the day before and then that morning so that I look at my calendar and it reminds me that I've made that commitment to myself and someone else that that's what I'm going to do for today.
Excellent. And what other resources do you have to keep you committed?
Um, I guess I'd have to say an internal resource would be the feeling of shame that I experience because I have so much, and people, you know, are real easy to label you as a hoarder, even though I do tend to keep it fairly organized in my mind. But, yeah, to see the sheer volume of stuff, it appears that I'm a hoarder and can't let go. And so that's a real uncomfortable feeling, and I don't want to be viewed as that. And so
your resource then is to counter that feeling, that judgment.
Right.
Okay. All right. That's good. So are there any other resources that you can think of that would help you be motivated that Sunday or keep your nose to the grindstone on that? What else would be helpful?
I've actually thought about inviting a friend or family member to come and help me with that, because sometimes doing it with somebody doesn't feel so alone, and they are good at helping me to ask the critical questions that helps me get to the point where it's like, okay, no, I need this, and it's an emotional reason.
Great.
Or,
great.
No, I don't need this any longer.
Good. Have you ever done that before? Ask a family member or a friend to come supervise your clutter or help you toss? Or?
I have, but they haven't been willing to. So what I've been doing the last 4 Sundays is I have a friend that I call, and if they're available, they talk with me while I work on it, and that's been helpful. So at least doing the phone call.
I was thinking that even your buddy coach. If you had a headset, you could walk around and say, "Now I'm tossing this." So that's kind of a distant support, whether it's your friend or buddy coach. And then I ask, is there anybody else local or close by? I don't know if you live rural or in a town or what else, that you think you could invite to come help you, because they would support you in decluttering. Anybody who could show up physically.
I've actually met an organizer who is a coach. And I could hire her. I asked her about bartering, but she said at this point she doesn't have a need for the kinds of things I coach. So I have considered hiring a coach or an organizer to help with that.
I have to tell you, I think that's a brilliant move. I mean, I had many lawyers I coached with. When they found out there were professional organizers, they went, "You're kidding." And then when they hired them, including me, by the way, I've hired an organizer a couple times, it is so helpful because they know the strategies and they can also be there to ask the right questions, to give you successes for going on. So if your budget can't afford that, given that you're not paying for storage anymore, maybe the turnaround is to actually do that, to get the organizer to give you a few hours of their time, and then you learn from that. What do you think about that alternative?
Until the budget improves, which means I get new coaching clients in my new area because I moved 400 miles away from where I was, and not everyone was willing to follow me. So need to raise the income because my expenses in my new location are higher, and the cut in income was more than I expected. So hiring someone's not in the budget today, but it's something that I've considered asking for as a Christmas gift, because I like meaningful and practical gifts.
Okay. So let me get this clear. You moved 400 miles away. You had a lot of clients, and you said didn't follow you. Now, is this coaching or is this social work therapy with your degree?
Coaching. I pretty much stopped doing therapy a couple years ago and switched over to coaching because I don't like dealing with insurance companies and I don't like billing. And I really like the results that I get with coaching. So,
good.
And my clients that transferred from therapy to coaching because they were at a point where coaching was more appropriate for them anyway.
So it sounds like you made the ethical clarity that you're not really doing therapy and calling it coaching, that they've progressed, and yet coaching format can be helpful for them and for you.
Right.
Okay, so here's
and
my next question.
That's based on your book, by the way.
Yes, thank you. So here's my next question. Why can't they use telephone coaching with you, even though you moved?
Well, the ones that were willing to do that, that were comfortable with phone coaching, you know, they have followed me.
Or even Skype coaching where they can see you.
Yeah, I've done that as well, but I had several that just weren't comfortable with that and felt like they needed the face-to-face contact.
Yeah, okay. Well, I appreciate that you've discerned that. You might always stay in touch with them and see if they wanted to do it via Skype where they could see your face, but if they want it in person in the office, then that's certainly a personal choice. So good for you for looking at that, and I think going back to the organizer, I appreciate that you need the budget, so then that's a motivating factor to get some coaching clients.
Exactly.
That's a motivator for you. Okay. How much does the organizer charge?
I think the one that I talked to was like $75 an hour.
Yeah, that's pretty typical. So you probably only need one coaching client to help pay for that.
Exactly.
Yeah, so but you got two or three, you'd be in.
Right. Yeah, it has to be over and above what I currently have.
Right. Gotcha. All right, so good motivator, working on the living room. Let me just think for a minute.
Well, I will tell you that one resource I did tap into was reading books and, you know, people who are professional organizers have written books, and so I've read several of those. As well as following a couple of guys who are the minimalist and their blogs and videos and all of that. So I kind of keep that whole idea fresh in my head with almost daily reminders of it.
Okay, good. And where do you live?
I'm in the Northeast Atlanta, Georgia area.
Okay. So here's a crazy coaching question, and I'm sure you face this from time to time if you're watching the weather. If one of these hurricanes were turning around and going smack up through the Northeast coast and it was going to hit Atlanta or you were going to have tornadoes or whatever, what would you grab in your house as a must-have, knowing that your house might be destroyed by fire or flooding? Or whatever. What's on your list of, I'm ready, I can take this with me?
And that's where it brings up the emotion, because I don't know. I know I can't take it all.
Yeah. Well, it should bring up the emotion, because nobody likes to see their house destroyed and their, you know, their stuff. But the stuff that really is not replaceable needs to go somewhere safe, safety deposit box or a fireproof safe you have in the house. Pictures can be put where? Pictures, photos, memories.
I can scan those and save them to a thumb drive.
Exactly. Great. And the other stuff, it's hard to say this, but it's just stuff. And yet, in today's technology, you can take a picture of anything you want to remember having it. Even when I lost my favorite Carmelo Anthony's signature on his rookie ticket due to a flood, at least I still had a picture of it. I can't sell the autograph, but, you know, or my Stan Musial baseball or some of that stuff, because I did have a flood when things were in storage. It is traumatic. And yet I also appreciate that you are trying to say, I know that if I let go of some of this stuff, the trauma goes with it. So here's the last thing I want to say, and we'll try to take a couple minutes just to wrap up. And this is a very complicated and yet doable situation that can show improvement. Clutter is one of the biggest places I start with clients. Not usually with this much clutter, but it doesn't matter if it's just your office, if it's mental clutter, like relationships that you've hung on to that need some fixing, if it's piles of real stuff. here's the deal. You stated this when you first introduced yourself, that there it drains, and I forget the words you use, it clogs my mind or something. I don't know what your words were, but here's what I thought about and here's what I know. We do have an energetic connection to our stuff. And if you could imagine like those old cartoons with bubbles above the person's head, you know, like, I have an idea, and it pops up in this little balloon, right? Every time you get rid of some clutter, that balloon, that picture of that clutter goes away and you regain the energy. It's like, goes right back into your brain. Now, I don't mean that neurologically, although maybe I do, because energy psychology is kind of proving today that the things that we're bothered by and don't get finished and obsessed with do drain us of energy. They even change our brain waves. So what I'd like you to imagine is practicing getting rid of the things you know you can get rid of, but staying with it long enough to say, how does that feel? What else am I getting rid of as I throw this book, as I get rid of this article, as I put some of this yarn in boxes and mark them color-coded and just get organized? You can keep all kinds of stuff if you're organized.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find it, boxes of the right label, your scale doesn't get buried under something else, so you can find it. You know, here's where it goes. This is the place for the scale. So the strategy that I want you to work on is the regaining of energy that comes from decluttering. And the other half of that, as we teach in the coaching, is what are the things that gain you energy? What are the things that you would be doing if you weren't bothered by the clutter that help you gain energy? I mean, what do you like if you like going to the shore, or if you like going to museums, or you go, what gives you energy? What, just name three things for me right now, the things that you can think of that you get energy from.
Weaving, spinning, knitting, and soap making.
Wow, that was quick. Okay.
Yeah.
So those creative, artistic, folksy things that, you know, are a lost art for many, that's what you love. That's what gives you energy. So here's what I'd like to request. I'd like you to start tackling the living room with the books you mentioned. That's a start. And you have a peer coach, and I'm going to grant you a follow-up coaching session with me for being a willing volunteer here. So you can email or text me, and we'll schedule a free session with me in a week or two to follow up, okay?
Thank you.
And the second thing is the things that give you joy and give you energy. I'd like you also, as you sit down to weave or yarn or knit or soap make, what would help that be even more enjoyable? Like being able to find stuff right away, to know where this color yarn is, to know where these darning needles are, or whatever it is. Is there a way in your organizing books that you could find, how do I create boxes and files and shelves? I mean, you can go in Atlanta to one of those, whatever that store is, Storage Plus or something. They have all kinds of nice little organizing boxes that help you color code and size things, and I'll leave that up to you. But would you be willing to do that?
I already have things fairly well organized. That's one of the things that my buddy coach helped me with. She suggested that I, instead of doing a micro sort where I was taking one box at a time and going through that and doing the keep, give, toss thing. She suggested doing a macro sort, and I did that to identify what's in each box. And so I've done that. Now, I think with the books, if I could eliminate and 10 more boxes of books, I've already eliminated probably 20 boxes of books since I started this journey about 3 years ago.
Okay.
So I need to eliminate 10 more boxes, and I'm looking at the boxes that have already been macro sorted. Then I would have room to put up a loom and be able to weave. That's my goal.
So here's my third request before we schedule another appointment. I want you to send me photos of those three rooms.
Mm.
And you may have to do like two or three photos each way. I mean, I want you to send me pictures of the clutter. And don't clean it up before you send it to me. I want you to take it today. Willing to do that?
Yes, I am. And actually, it's already cleaned up because I spent all day yesterday doing a macro sort and getting things better organized.
But we just spent 30 minutes talking about the clutter you have. So even if it is improved, I want to take the picture as it is now.
Okay, I can do that.
And you can send that and attach it to the email to me. So anything else you need in this moment to before we end our coaching here?
No, I feel pretty good about what we've talked about and the realization that I had and my goals and thanks for your support.
Well, I appreciate you being willing to step up with who knows how many other people are listening on the end of the line, because I totally forgot. I was just having a conversation with you. So thank you, Mona. Let's unmute the lines. And if there's not a lot of background noise, we'll take some comments from people live. Okay, so everybody's unmuted now. If you're aware of any background noise that you have, just mute yourself if you can. Otherwise, it sounds pretty clear. So who's got a comment about the coaching? Now, let me just say, this is not the time where you ask Mona anything or offer help. So the coaching's done. I do want you to comment on what you heard in the coaching, what was masterful, what wasn't, and then we'll get some feedback from Mona as well.
Yeah, Pat, this is Dan. I guess I could start.
Okay, Dan.
Yeah, I really liked how you really clarified the issue with asking how much questions and sort of some time questions about when, time-related questions on how long has this been going on, has this been an ongoing problem, and so forth, especially with the idea of if this is a unique problem or something ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of using the question of what I want for you, I think that's very directive and helpful, because it sounds like Mona was, if she knew what the answer to the problem was, she
mm-hmm.
would not be talking to you. So being sort of directive with that and asking her what you wanted for her to do, or sort of the overall idea, I thought was very insightful.
I appreciated you catching the phrase when I said what I want for you. That's I think that's in my book. I think it's in our training under 7 empowerment skills. It's not a statement that is directing her in any way, but it is a kind of, what's the word? It's a futuring for the client that I'm in your court. So it's not what I want for you to do, although I did offer some ideas and suggestions for her to consider. But that statement, what I want for you is kind of putting some concrete to I want her success. What I want for you is to get to this point where, whatever we said. So that's a key statement, and it's different than it's say, what I want for you to do is this.
Mm-hmm.
So
I
appreciated you picking that out. It's a nuance, but yes.
Right. Yeah,
thanks.
That's some really really clean language. And I had a quote in here that you said, what other resources do you have to keep you committed? And I think that's really, really huge. And I think it's a challenging one for the person getting coached sometimes. And I think that's a really great question to ask them to help them what resources they have to keep them committed. And I think it's sort of sometimes surprises the client sometimes.
Let me tell you at that moment. And by the way, I hope everybody heard the silence that I allowed after I asked that question. So what resources do you have? And what's really going on in my head is I was biting my lip not to suggest getting a buddy over, or biting my lip not to suggest actually anything. And you know what? She came up with it. The first one she came up with was, I have this inner resource of guilt or the shame or the frustration. I don't want to be labeled as a hoarder. So that's my resource. It's my motivation. And then the second one, she said, well, I have this this friend and this buddy coach, and then she might ask people to come over. So those are things I might have suggested anyway, but they came from her by me just allowing her to wrestle with the question. And resources are something you're always looking at. In person, you might be able to see a facial expression or pick up on the energy different or how their voice changed when something was talked about. And you want the client to access resources they're not aware of, resources within themselves, but resources they have that they've never thought about. So, yeah. Somebody else, what did you hear or what did you pick up on?
Kathy, I like the way, well, you're pacing. You were right there, but gently moving her forward. But from the very beginning, when she said she'd like to get comfortable state of minimalism, and then you right away said, well, that is a long way. And you tried to set her up for success by saying, start with something that you could do.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I liked, and certainly in coaching we've all used it, but you referred a lot to imagine, you know. Imagine what your living room would look like, or imagine dealing with these books and putting them into different piles. I think that moved her forward, definitely.
Yeah, the visualization, trying to access, well, in that same phrase, I was trying to normalize for her that she, I didn't think of her as a hoarder, but some of us have clutter. Some of us have organized piles of files. I mean, my personal office is a lot better than it was in the old days, but if you open my closet, maybe not so much, but that gets to stay shut, you know. I know what's in there, and it's not really clutter. It's just a lot of, where's that book? And I might have to look for it for a while. So I don't have my Dewey Decimal System in my own office, but it is trying to access what works for the client. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was attempting to do there. And the pacing of the language is, when I'm coaching, I have to counter my general tendency to be a very active listener. I have to slow myself down because I will almost step in too quick with a what if or what else. And so I tried to demonstrate a couple of times the use of powerful silence. If we're going to teach you to ask powerful questions, sometimes to let those land and let those fomate a little bit is where the real change takes place, where the real insight for the client takes place. Anybody else with an observation or a comment?
This is Linda. I had to step out just for a second, so I hope it wasn't talked about before, but I was curious when she mentioned that clutter might be related to some emotional gratification that she gets from these certain items, and you didn't really go into that. Was that by design?
Yes. Yeah, because I knew in the 30-minute call I wasn't be able to get to the depth of that. But I also want to clarify, I don't think she used the phrase emotional gratification. It was more of an emotional connection to what it represented in the past to a degree, if I'm right about that. Mona, is that correct? Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I guess you could say there's some gratification or safety or comfort or something, so we won't debate the word. But, I avoided that on purpose without – at that point, I'm dancing between – not being superficial and ignoring the importance of that, but also knowing that we can't do surgery.
Right, no. And you really wanted to try and get to some point of
success.
Some action steps within that 20. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Good observation, Mona. Let's hear from you. What happened for you in the experience from beginning to end?
Well,
how did you change or shift?
I feel some readiness. I feel like I've brought it to this point as of, you know, before the call, and now I have the next step. Because I remember thinking last night, okay, what's my next step? And now I've got it. And I even have a motivator for what's going to keep me moving on that next step, because I want to be able to do the things that I really enjoy, which I haven't really been able to do since I moved because I don't have the room to open up and set up a loom.
Excellent. Yeah, so you did some pre-work knowing you were going to be coached today.
Well, no, part of it was my
commitment.
No, part of it was my commitment to my buddy coach, my calendar, and myself. I honestly forgot about it until I looked at my calendar this morning.
Great. Okay, super. Anything else from your experience and what happened to you in the coaching?
Well, I thought it was interesting where the tears did come up, and I made note of that, and I plan to take a look at that issue later, because that was a little surprising. But just the, the clarity that I feel, that it didn't tap into more, and that I am ready to let go and have a system for that. So
good.
I can't tell you how wonderful that feels.
Good. Well, I want to commend you, A, for being willing to be a volunteer coach on a very complex topic in front of other people. I want to make sure, B, that we have your permission to keep this recording, or would you rather we don't?
Oh, no, you're welcome to keep the recording. My goal is to pay it forward. If anything we've said and done on this call can help somebody else, please use it.
All right. Okay, good. And then C, I just want to just generally commend you and your spirit for recognizing what is tough, but having a very, I'm hearing an intense, which is both emotional that will lead to elation as well as some sadness or whatever. And those can coexist as you begin to free yourself from whatever is binding you to. It's always the past, right? We don't bind ourselves to the future with the stuff we have. But
right.
we're not gonna have the future we want if we're bound to the past. So as you begin looking at that, I just want to commend you for what you're willing to let go of. And I would just offer one more thing for you to think about. We talked about those three piles, right?
Yes.
Keep, dump, or give. You could have a fourth one that can be helpful in these circumstances called maybe. And the maybe box is, I'm not sure, I think I can get rid of it. And I used to call that the 30-day box. If you haven't done anything with it in 30 days, you can probably move it to the giveaway or dump box.
Okay.
So you could have a maybe, and you could look at the maybe every once in a while and say, now am I willing to unattach myself from that energy too? Because that's you're keeping it with the idea that maybe you don't need to.
Yeah, my biggest thing is I tell myself I might need that someday.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I have a 20-20 rule. If it costs less than $20 and I can replace it within 20 minutes or 20 miles, then I can let it go.
Huh, that's a good rule. An equally good rule is if you get rid of 10 books, that you can't buy 10 books.
Right. Well, I'm trying to access online resources as much as possible.
There you go. I love it. Okay, well, thank you very much. Any other final comments anybody has? Or you could ask a question of Mona if you want, just about the coaching, not about the issue.
Hi, my name's Catherine, and I'm a student. And I wanted to ask you, Pat, I just want to comment that you were really affirming, but I wonder as a new student, I'm just finishing my first course, but what I wanted to ask is how do you coach and be affirming and without being directive? Because I thought some of your insights and your comments were extremely good, and I think that they were helpful. And when I put myself in her shoes, so to speak, I thought that, you came up with some really, really good comments that would make me think. But I'm just wondering, how do you do that without becoming directive?
Well, you know, here's the dance. We kid ourselves when we say in coaching that we're, in one sense, avoiding advice giving. But the fact that we're coaching with somebody, any question we ask, any comment we make is going to be taken as affirming or acknowledging or something for the client. And that is kind of a direction. It's not directive in the sense that I'm telling her what to do exactly. It's like, here's all you have to do and you'll be done with this problem. But we are trying to be use direct client language, and that's not the same as being directive. The other thing that we teach, and I know some people may, other coaches may say, no, pure coaching is just asking powerful questions. And I say to that, BS. Because eventually people are also paying you for your experience, your knowledge, your expertise, in a way where you just put it on the table. You say, hearing you say A, B, and C makes me think of D. Would you mind if I offer another possibility? And they consider it. It's not I'm offering the possibility. I'm offering a new way of thinking or something that I thought about in the moment. The key is I don't offer it first. Evoke from the client first. You know, like the reason I didn't tell her, well, have you thought of calling a friend? is because she thought of it. She thought of the resources that she had, even though I could have probably guessed that that would be one. It was better for me to hold out on that. Is that helpful? Does that answer your comment?
Yes, it's very helpful. And then one of the other questions that I had, when she makes a good move forward, how do you say, you know, good for you or that's great without her thinking, oh, again, without being directive and saying, yeah, that's the right decision?
Well, I would never say that's the right decision, but there is that dance. Some people might say coaching's not to be cheerleading, but I think there's a time when you have to be acknowledging to a client. So in my books, I've always said, you know, if you can acknowledge and endorse somebody for who they are, not what they're doing, who they're being, that's a unique feature of coaching. It's very hard for us not to be motivational and positive for somebody saying, that sounds like a good idea. I'd really like to acknowledge your choice making there. That's a little stronger than saying, oh, good, I was going to suggest that too. Give it a try and let me know. See, that's what a friend would say, maybe. Say, I think that's a good idea. Give it a try. A coach would say, I want to acknowledge the empowerment I heard in your voice when you made that choice. I mean, I really think that's a big step for you. So something like that. It's just a nuance. Is that helpful?
Very, very much so. That's exactly what I was looking for. Thank you so much.
So in summary, what we talked about last month and what I tried to demonstrate here, mastery in coaching is not an end place. It's not like I have become a master and I'm on the mountaintop and people come to me for my wisdom. Mastery is a process. And there are times when I'm more masterful than others. And I will tell you the reason I always offer a follow-up session to people who volunteer, but I particularly want to do it with Mona because this is a complex and yet doable challenge. It's not like someone's trying to write their book and they keep getting up and not writing, or they don't go to the gym. It's not like that. This is a bigger, complex, multi-tangled problem. And the one place I didn't go that I kept wanting to go, but we didn't, was the use of a metaphor. I've tried to teach in my metaphor class, and I talked last time in this mastery class, the use of metaphors would be something that would probably short-circuit some of the talk and get to an image that Mona can hang on to as, you know, getting unleashed from her prison or feeling free, like, who knows, whatever. We'll talk about that in our private coaching session. But mastery is something you try to do in the purity of coaching is stick with evocative questions. Hit your pause button so when you ask a question, there's silence, and then use things like, And what else? Given that we only had the 25:30, we went 35 minutes. I was also conscious of trying to make sure we got to a point where it was useful of the time, but we needed to wrap up. I felt we had to kind of short-circuit it a little bit, so we'll do that when we catch up. So I hope it's helpful for all of you. Keep reading, keep practicing. The secret to good coaching is to coach a lot of people. Your clients will make you more masterful because you can always ask them, so give me some feedback on the coaching. What was most helpful to you and what could have been more helpful? Don't ever say, and what did I do wrong? Or what did I do that wasn't helpful? Because people might want to tell you, but that's not helpful. What is helpful is, what did you do that worked? And what could you have done differently that they might have liked even better? You get feedback like that, you'll get more masterful in the dance of coaching. All right, I've got us at the top of the hour. So thank you all very much for attending, and I'll let you know what we're going to have for our forum next month.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you. Mona, you be sure to email me.
Yes, sir, I will.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Bye.